Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 92. My name is John. Yeah, darling, go make it happen. Take the world in a love embrace. Fire all of your guns at once and explode into space. I have a lot to talk about this month, but I have to start with this story. Years ago, on the last day of eighth grade, the teacher asked the class what they wanted to do over the summer. I'd say a good third of the class, maybe even more, bragged about going to the upcoming Duran Duran concert. Now, don't get me wrong, not only do I like Duran Duran, I was one of the first kids to like them back in the day, and I even got picked on a little bit before they really caught on. But at that particular time, I was already kind of over them. So when my turn came up, I told everyone which concert I wanted to go see, even though I had no way of actually being able to go. And all the Duran Duran fans sneered and made snotty little comments. I said, I'd like to go to Houston and see Tom Petty. The Friday after his death, I went to karaoke at my favorite little dive bar, and I knew I wanted to sing one or two of his songs. Now, normally, you get to sing maybe three or four times a night with the size of the typical crowd. This night, however, I got to sing about 10 times, so I mixed in 4 of his greatest. I began with my personal favorite, I Won't Back Down. A couple of songs later, I sang Runnin' Down a Dream. Later on, most of the bar sang along with me for Free Fallin', and again at the end for Mary Jane's Last Dance. I hope I did him justice, but I wanted to give a small tribute to a talent whose music influenced and endured long past the last day of eighth grade. Rest in peace, Tom Petty, and thank you. His passing was the second piece of awful news that day. Now, don't take this the wrong way. I'm not saying I'm tired of doing this podcast. I've long said this is catharsis for me. This little ego trip of a podcast is my way of sorting out my own thoughts. So, no, I have no intentions of ending this so long as I have the brain and resources to continue it. But months like this, when you're heartbroken over tragedy, and you wonder if this society can turn from its destructive path, or if we are doomed to tear each other apart over idiocy. It's really difficult to pull together a 30-minute monologue with a semblance of reason. Sometimes I just want to go back to the karaoke bar and sing until life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as we know it are inevitably gone. Then I went on vacation with Gina to celebrate our anniversary as we do every year. I got to try foods I had never had before, or hadn't had in a long time. I got to feel the peaceful rhythms of the ocean. I got to kiss a dolphin. I had butterflies land on my hand. I got to pet polydactyl cats. Oh, you should see some of the beautiful photographs I came home with. And of course, the entire week with the most beautiful woman in the world, my best destiny. And it reminded me that there is beauty in this world that gets lost in all the misery. It's those all too brief vignettes of happiness and beauty that's worth the effort to keep going and try to turn the world from atrophy. This is not the topic I wanted to talk about this month, nor is it one I really ever wish to discuss, especially in the wake of tragedy. The only reason I'm talking about it is because so many reactionary and myopic voices have put their opinions into the ether that I can't escape thinking about it myself. And since this podcast is all about me sorting out my thoughts, my preoccupation with the topic drove me to pop it into the schedule. Let me pull together a few threads from the past few podcasts. It's easy to let your emotions get the better of you. I did that way too much in my youth. Now, don't get me wrong, there were times I gave in to certain emotions and ended up with some passionate trysts to fondly remember as I slogged through middle age, particularly an aspiring, voluptuous blonde model. But when it comes to anger, generally considered a negative emotion, giving in to that never sent me to places I should have been. The same goes for fear. I'm kind of hesitant to talk about this, but fear got the best of me recently. Over the years, I've realized I've become more and more claustrophobic. I used to think of claustrophobia as only the fear of enclosed places, but a key component of the phobia is the fear of oxygen deprivation. Crowded elevators used to be nothing more than a minor annoyance. Now, when I find myself in a crowded elevator, I need to close my eyes, slow my breathing, and remind myself the doors will open again soon, because my mind will consider the possibility we get stuck and our oxygen runs out. A couple of years ago, Gina and I toured a resort's spa facilities, and they invited us to try out the steam bath, but less than 5 seconds after walking in, I was so unnerved I had to leave. See, the dense steam was so stifling, I felt I couldn't breathe properly. I mentioned some of the good things I encountered when Gina and I went on our annual vacation together. It wasn't all perfect, though, as I learned a good lesson about myself. This year was a cruise, and we went on a snorkeling excursion. They took us out about maybe half a mile off the coast of the Bahamas to a reef. All of the tourists put on their snorkeling gear, and they warned us not to breathe through our nose because that would surely break the seal on our masks and let water in. I put the mask on, and it's tight around my eyes and nose, which is not something I'm comfortable with, but I can obviously still see and can easily breathe through my mouth. On the boat, people are getting into the water. I pop the mouthpiece in for the snorkeling tube and bite down like they told me to, which I later realized I shouldn't have done until I was in the water. And sitting on the back of the boat, I plan to gently drop into the water. That's not quite what happened. I'm still a pretty chunky guy. I didn't gently drop so much as plopped into the water, fully submerged a foot or two below the surface. Seawater rushed through my breathing tube and right into my mouth. I was already a little freaked out. I break the surface, try to get the water out of my tube, get the tube back into my mouth, and look under the water to see the reef below like I'm supposed to. But As I breathed, I realized I was not entirely successful getting the water out of my breathing tube. I suck back in a little seawater into my mouth, and I instinctively cough, which goes out my nose, which opens up my mask, and water gets in. Now, I'm having trouble breathing. I get my head out of the water, and I look around, and the boat and I have drifted about 15 feet apart, but to me, it seems like half a mile. All I could think about was getting back onto the boat. I swim towards it, and people are still trying to get off the boat to snorkel, but I need to get back on. I slipped trying to get back in and almost injured somebody else close to me. Fortunately, I didn't. After everybody else got in the water, Gina and the tour operators encouraged me to try again with a bulkier life vest and without the breathing tube, just sticking my mask underwater a few seconds at a time. I tried it for a few minutes, and I got to see a few beautiful fishes and some coral, but it just wasn't working for me. I made my way back onto the boat much more gracefully the second time, and sat down trying to calm my nerves. Fortunately, I found some Pepto-Bismol tablets we had packed for the trip, and that helped calm my stomach a tiny bit, but I was still nauseous from coming down from the panic attack. I'm known as the guy who keeps the level head in times of stress. The joke Gina has is the calmer I am about a crisis, the worse it is. When she and I were in New Orleans with some friends, finding out our flights home had been canceled just hours before the edge of Katrina was due to hit, no panic. When a little seawater gets into my scuba mask, I'm a bundle of frenetic nerves. It was embarrassing, to say the least. All rational thought left me for those few moments. There were a dozen things I could have or should have done that would have altered what happened, but I was too scared to do them. Fear keeps you from being rational. Anger keeps you from being rational. Anger combined with fear is dangerous. But anger combined with fear in control of a group of people is a guaranteed disaster waiting to happen. A group of people together physically in a specific area under the control of anger and fear leads to horrible things. That frightening cocktail leads to people getting trampled at concerts or soccer matches. Innocent people in the wrong place at the wrong time getting beaten in riots. Innocent people in the wrong place at the wrong time getting murdered by lynch mobs. Yes, those are extreme and horrendous cases. But the angry and fearful mob does not have to be together to do something negative. In this day and age, where you can have immediate contact with people across the globe, and some people have the opportunity to pontificate to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people on social media, it's easy to scare and outrage people. Even better when you have a society so divided and paranoid of other people's beliefs and skin color and sexual identity that any half-truth or misinformation can be used to set people off. No wonder we have more and more sociopaths cropping up. When we are inundated with media, political parties, and their narrow-minded reactionary sycophants, fostering a climate of fear and anger. Fear keeps you from being rational. Anger keeps you from being rational. Anger combined with fear is dangerous, but you don't have to be in the throes of a mob to have anger and fear keep you from rational thought. You can seem like you're in complete control of your faculties while in the thrall of negative emotions. When people are scattered across the cyberverse, anger and fear can control them, and they may not even show signs of it. This is especially true of those who have allowed themselves to be programmed to react to those half-truths and misinformation. You can react to a bad situation and exacerbate the fear and anger with a retweet. The mob examples I gave earlier were people together physically, doing physical harm to others. In the age of social media, the cyber mobs may not do physical harm, but they sometimes unwittingly sow the seeds of tyranny. Okay, I've been tiptoeing around the topic long enough. A few weeks ago, at an outdoor concert in Las Vegas, a gunman from a high-rise window opened fire on the crowd, killing 58 people and injuring 546 more. In the wake of this senseless tragedy, you had the stereotypical reactions from the conspiracy theorist claiming there were multiple gunmen, to the sick political extremist who assumed the country music crowd were likely Trump supporters who therefore got what they deserved. Of course, never wanting a crisis to go to waste, the politicos promoted the fear and anger caused by the tragedy. What happened there could happen to you, don't you know? We need to have more gun laws to protect you. Exploit tragedy, promote fear, advance agenda, destroy liberty, repeat. We have to do something. That's what they always tell us. We have to do something so this never happens again. Do what?
We don't know, but we have to do something. The laws we have didn't stop this, so we have to make new laws.
But the laws you are now proposing in the wake of this would not have stopped it from happening.
I don't care, we have to do something.
Here is what the exploiters are missing from this horrible Las Vegas tragedy. Once a madman is determined to commit evil, he's going to do everything possible to make it happen. Ban guns? There will still be mass shootings. Legal access to guns is meaningless to a person who wants to end the lives of innocent strangers. They will find a way to get a gun through the black market. Do you think the United States is the only place in the world that manufactures firearms? Do you think that another law will stop guns from getting into the hands of a demon who desperately wants one? The legislation that we have now, that we were told we had to have in order to protect people, didn't work. And the legislation that was proposed in the wake of this would not have stopped the shooter. So what's the use of the law other than to keep guns out of the hands of the good people? Don't pretend that a ban on certain types of guns or ammunition will make any difference. Bans aren't going to work. You know why? Because some people want to keep non-citizens from coming into this country. They want to ban them from entering. How's that working out? Some people want to keep illegal drugs from coming into this country, so they ban them. How's that working out? You ban guns from certain areas to assuage your fears. Gun-free zones. That leaves innocents without protection. Good people who would never attack another person. Good people who know how to use a firearm and respect the proper procedures. These are the ones you are preventing from protecting themselves. Your grand posturing you claim will keep us safe merely leaves the defenseless to be slaughtered. You refuse to acknowledge how many people could have been saved had a good person been able to exercise his or her right to carry a gun and stop the madness. This incessant need to leave good people defenseless and make them future targets just to ease your ignorant fears is tiresome. I know I'm going to catch hell for that statement one of these days. Gee, I want to be famous, but I refuse to exploit tragedy and promote fear to advance my political agenda. What's a nobody like me to do? There are times when you have to eliminate emotion from the discussion. It's not often, but you have to when fear and anger of a tragedy will cause the destruction of personal liberty. Emotion-driven policy after 9/11, that fear and panic, gave us the Patriot Act. What anti-liberty legislation will fear and panic give us next? There's something we all need to understand. Rare is the sea change of lost liberty. It is done in slow, small increments. That is why you do not make small, quote-unquote, reasonable concessions. When the Obama administration pushed its gun legislation, did I think the military would march down the street, armed to the teeth, to knock on everybody's door and confiscate their weapons? Of course not. That's ridiculous. But I'm not thinking about the consequences of that legislation for me right now. I'm thinking about the consequences of that legislation as a step in the process for a couple of generations down the road. Make that concession now. And when the next tragedy strikes, give in to the anger and fear and give up a little bit more liberty again and again as tragedy again strikes. Little by little, baby step by baby step, and ever so slowly nudge. Until one day, the collectivists have the citizenry unarmed and ready for control. No, there will be no military marching down the street today or tomorrow, or probably not even in my lifetime. 50 years from now, though, may be a different story. Give in to the fear and anger now. Allow the agents of force to make it more difficult for you to defend yourself from a perceived threat. And you shorten that timeline for when the collectivists do come marching down the street. The same people who spent the last 8 months comparing Trump to Hitler now say citizens should disarm and trust the government to protect them. It's like they don't even listen to this podcast. So which is it, leftists? Is the current chief executive equivalent to history's greatest monster who rounded up and executed millions of unarmed citizens? Or is he someone you can trust to be defenseless around? Where does your hyperbole lie? I'm sure I have to keep saying this, but if you've listened to this podcast over the past year and a half, you know I think Trump is a twat who's bringing corporatism into greater power. I'm no supporter, but your dehumanization efforts won't fool me. You're trying to tell me a lot of things, though, aren't you? Not just what to think of the winner of the two worst presidential candidates in American history. You're trying to tell me how to live my life. You're playing the same game you vilify the other side of the political aisle for playing. I'm tired of all of it, but I'm focusing on you anti-gun people this time around. Who the hell are you to tell me or anybody else how they may or may not protect themselves? If a woman feels she needs a gun because she fears she may be raped in her neighborhood, do you deny her that right and subject her to possible horror? If a community is worried about the possibility of an attack on the school where their children attend, do you enforce your gun laws and hope nothing bad happens? We've seen how that played out before. If you are willing to deny the natural right of people to defend their lives and their property, which right of yours that you hold dear am I permitted to deny you? Well, you think this is only a one-way street? You think only you get to take away the rights of others? What if I don't give you the opportunity to choose? What if I just pick something about how you live your life that I don't like and force you to give it up? What would you think of me? Well, now you know how you are viewed. So many people want to change the world, but never bother to ask the world if it wants to be changed. Be the example of what you want the world to be, and let that convince others to change. Don't try to force them. When have you ever known that to work? Forcing others to bend to your will only fosters resentment. I've said it many times before. If you want to understand the spirit of the Second Amendment, it's not just about a firearm. It is about your right to defend yourself. You have the natural right to defend yourself from whatever threat you perceive. There are two key words in that sentence: defend and perceive. Just because I don't think that the government will come down my street tomorrow to try to confiscate my firearms, that doesn't mean you have to think the same. You could be convinced that the fascists will knock on your door tomorrow and you want to be ready to defend your family and property. I may disagree with your thinking, but I am not going to stop you from procuring whatever you feel you need to defend yourself. It would be an act of evil for me to force you to give up what you feel you need to defend yourself just because I don't see the same threat as you. The other part, of course, is defend. It's already against the law for someone to initiate violence against others. You do not have the right to initiate violence because you assume someone is going to do something bad to you. Gun owners know this. That's why the first victims of gun control laws are the people who know when, where, and how to properly use them. The angry, fearful, myopic, burgeoning fascists either don't know or don't care they are putting more and more good people at risk by disarming them with their anti-liberty laws. More and more innocents are forced into defenseless situations, making it easy for the sick and deranged bad guys to stake their claim at infamy. Whether it's responsible gun owners fighting to keep the right to defend themselves from collectivists, or the latest victims of a sociopath, the targets are growing on us every day. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.